This morning, we've all gathered to hopefully pay a lasting tribute to one of the happiest people I knew. That was Mr. Morton Roberts. I never called him by his first name. I never said Mort. It was always Mr. Roberts, as many of my peers did when we were growing up in the community. He was Mr. Roberts, and his wife, a blessed memory, Fanny Roberts, also I never called her Fanny. It was either Mrs. Roberts, and sometimes at camp she would let us refer to her as Auntie Fanny. But they were the sweetest people, the sweetest couple. And Mr. Roberts, for today, for the purpose of today, forgive me, I will refer to him as Mort, because I know so many people in this room did as well. As you may have heard, he reached an unbelievable age of 100 and a half years. That is quite a milestone. He was born to his parents, Yunda, I think his name was Jules, is that correct? And his mother, Jules and Esther Roberts. Mort was from the Bronx. And if you didn't know it was the Bronx, just by talking to him, and from this area, you could probably figure out it was somewhere around the Bronx, because he retained that beautiful musical New York accent, I think, until the end of days. Whenever he spoke with you, his accent from New York came out. He didn't succumb to the West Coast diction and pronunciation. He kept who he was, and it was, frankly, it was really music to my ears, because I loved listening to him speak. He was born in the Bronx, August 31st, 1925, and as I mentioned, he was 100 and a half years old. He was a devoted husband, a dedicated husband to his wife, Fanny, for 53 years before her passing in 2003. And together they raised their loving family, we all know them well, sweet, wonderful children, Judy, Lisa, and John. Grew up with them, know them well, haven't seen, I'm sorry, Lisa, to see you under these circumstances, but still very good to see you. He was a loving father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and a dear friend to so many of us in the community. He was a World War II veteran serving in the Army, and like so many of that generation, they were very faithful and served in the United States Armed Forces. I think I remember him attending on Veterans Day at the Seattle Hebrew Academy. I remember him sitting there so proud. The school would bring in the veterans from the community so the students of today can see, and many, many men from our community attended that, and they wore the, if they had a remembrance of the uniform, whether it be a cap, a hat, a jacket, anything, and I remember seeing his smiling face there as well. However, if you were to ask me what I remember most about Mort Roberts, two venues come to mind. One, first and foremost, he was at the synagogue every Shabbat. I can tell you exactly where he sat. He always said hello. We always chatted. He was always happy. And the other venue that I remember very, very distinctively was, as a youngster growing up in the Seattle Sephardic community, is he and his wife, Fanny, ran the Sephardic youth camp. For many years, they were deeply involved. He was like the camp director. I know she did arts and crafts and other things, and she was just a source of great knowledge. But he wasn't just a camp director. He actually, I remember being, I don't know, 13, 14, 15 years old, he would come talk to us in our cabins, and he was always very calm. He was always, I don't even remember him scolding us or lecturing us. And this was a camp director who was a family man. He had a wife and children, yet He and his wife would faithfully come to camp every year, and they were devoted to the system. They just weren't punching in a time clock and putting in their time. They believed in what they were doing. They felt that it would benefit the youth of the community, and it did. Case in point, decades later, I can speak to you with great detail of what I remember from their presence at camp, meaning they made a positive impression. And it wasn't just on me, it was to all of my friends and all of my peers who were at camp. They have nothing but fond memories of his and his wife's devotion to camp. Now true, times were simpler then, in the 60s and 70s when we were youngsters growing up, but they were also more difficult. We didn't have cell phones, we didn't have computers, there wasn't faxing, there wasn't texting, but there were always discipline problems at camp because you had a bunch of kids. They're always going to run into trouble, but like I said before, they handled everybody with such care and compassion and love and devotion. No one ever turned on them, no one ever resented them. They weren't your typical adult figures that, oh, look out, here they come. They were really our friends. They were loving, yet they were mature adults who really guided us very well. However, the Sephardic Bicker Hulam congregation, where they were also deeply devoted and volunteered for many things, wasn't their only public service. They were about the greater good for the greater Jewish community. Judy was telling me yesterday that her family and her parents and her family also were affiliated with Congregation Bikur Cholim. The other, they call it Bikur Cholim Machzikeh Hadat. It's funny, we have such a small Jewish community and we have two synagogues with almost identical names. But the Bikur Cholim, as they called it, on 17th in Yesler, they were affiliated, and Mort also served as president of the men's club there, and his wife served as president, I don't know if they call it the ladies' auxiliary or the sisterhood, but she also served as president of that organization as well. But very significantly, they were on the ground floor and raised money and were behind one of the holiest of endeavors every Jewish community needs to have, and that is, the Hebrew word for it is mikveh. A mikveh, the Ladino word for it is banya, and the English word for it, because the concept really doesn't exist in the Western culture, but it's a ritual bath. It's where new brides go before they get married to immerse themselves in the water. It's where family purity is the continuity of family purity is continued there. It's an absolute necessity in any traditional Jewish community, and they were the founding members. They assisted in the fundraising for it, and I believe it was located. They built it at Bicker Hulam on 17th and Yesler, and of course the city still has a mikveh. It has since moved. But what a worthy cause and what a worthy endeavor that they participated in. Nowadays, it's so confusing. Life can be so confusing. Religion can be so confusing. There are so many, we hear so many things. The news can, you turn on the television, you hear the news, and you'll hear multiple opinions. Are they speaking their mind? Are they speaking fact? Is it propaganda? Back in the day, it wasn't so. And these were solid, Mort was a solid member of our community. When he spoke to you, you knew he was talking to you and not talking over you or away from you. He looked you in the eye, he smiled when he spoke with you, and you rarely walked away without feeling a sense of warmth and welcome that he really exuded when he spoke with you. Our sages tell us, and he did this intuitively, that whenever you encounter someone, whenever you encounter an individual and you greet them, make sure you do it with, the Hebrew is, Beseber Panim Yafot, that your countenance, that the expression on your face is a welcome one, a happy one, and that you put the person to whom you are addressing, to whom you are speaking, at ease. And to me, that was Mark Roberts. He, when you spoke with him, that smile came through. He always had a kind word. In all my years affiliated with the synagogue, I can't remember a single word of off-color, not kind, criticism. It didn't exist, because he was all about the good. And that's really who he was. On a very personal note, Vivian, as I was understanding coming in, I was thinking of it ever since, unfortunately, we heard of his passing. I said, oh, Mort Roberts, not only do I remember him as a community icon, a dear member of the congregation, a camp director, but he was a dear friend of my father's. And they would go on these excursions and on these outings, more than 10, 15 years ago, before my father passed away. But my father would always tell me, I went out with Mark today, we had the greatest time, we drove all the way to Arlington, or we drove to this place, and we drove to that casino. We don't, neither of us really gambled, but we just went and did all kinds of field trips. And they gave each other such happiness, and they were real pals. I took pleasure in it, because my dad had a great friend, and I know Mort had a great friend in my father. And our families go far back too, because as I mentioned, in our youth, John, Lisa, and Judy were no strangers to us. We all grew up in the same community, in that very same camp. So you might say we were kind of all cut from the same Sephardic Bicker Holman youth camp stock. And those were very good times. So I know I speak on behalf of all of us present today that we wish to Judy, to Lisa, and to John, and to your families, immediate families, and extended families, our deepest condolences. He was a devoted husband. He loved all of you dearly. He was a proud grandfather and proud great-grandfather. And our blessing to you is, may you soon be comforted. Time is, as I say, unfortunately, at these kinds of events, when we say, Mi hashamayim tenuchanu, it is really only God Almighty who can give you comfort, and we all pray for that to come to you very soon. Tehei nishmatot tzerurah, v'yitzror hachayim b'gan Eden, Amen. May his soul rest in peace in Gan Eden, Amen. At this time, I know Lisa is, are you not, any other speakers? I don't know. Oh, Levana speaking? Okay, please. Any other speakers after Levana?
I will say something.
Okay, Lisa after Levana. Please, Levana.
Hello. This is probably one of the hardest speeches that I've had to write. How does one say goodbye to someone who's been one life's constants? Where do I even begin? His infectious smile could light up a room. Papu had a special energy about him. when we were together, it was palpable. I could literally feel his excitement and love every time we were together. And I would often say, "Papu, are you excited? I can tell you're excited because I'm excited too." Then he'd say, "Yes, I'm very excited," and give me a glowing smile. We were always so happy to be together. We had the great fortune of being able to spend lots of time together. He helped raise me and was a father figure to me. I remember going to work with him at the Klein Allen home. He lived right across the street from the Klein, and he'd take me by the hand and run up and down the steep hill in front of his house. I felt like I was flying. We drove the bus to the day center at the Klein. I especially loved riding the day center bus with him, and he greeted everyone with that big smile of his. When we got home from the day center, we'd sit around the kitchen table and share an amazing lunch of sardines and bread. The sardines always tasted better with Papu. He'd get the kind soaked in olive oil so we could dunk our bread in the oil. Sometimes it was leftover challah. I found the sardines fascinating because they still have the skin and bones, and you can eat the whole thing. In the summer, Nona and Papu and I shared road trip after road trip, and he always was a quiet, gentle, and grounding force that kept us entertained with his creative puns. Watching TV with him was always a chance to cuddle up. Occasionally, he would nod off, but if you asked him, "Papu, are you asleep?" he'd say, "No, I'm just resting my eyes." When I was in grad school, he accompanied me to an audition for the President's Own Band in Washington, D.C. His quiet, calm, and steady force grounded me for the audition. He and Nona were some of my greatest fans, and they attended almost all of my performances. I would not be the person that I am today had they not stepped in to help me. He used to call his home the inn. Before I was married, he welcomed my then fiance, Aaron, into his home for a summer while he worked a college summer job. I was away at a music festival, and they immediately hit it off as they connected over a similar punny sense of humor. He got to know Aaron well and had a deep connection with him. He was also a proud great-grandfather, Big Papu. His eyes would light up when he saw his great-grandchildren. Jack, age 16, Callie, age 15, Leo, age 12, and Lily, 7 months. The older children had a very, very special relationship with him. Jack in particular was fortunate to get to know him for 16 years. He and Callie were extremely close as well, and she also lived with him for a period of time. Some of my fondest memories of Papu with the great-grandchildren were at Passover. He loved to host Passover Seder, and he loved to try to trick and play jokes on the kids when they were looking and trading for the afikoman. Jack and Callie would be bouncing off the walls, running all around as if they had electricity flowing through their bodies to try to find the afikoman. And one time, Leo found the afikoman, and Papu said, "What can I trade you for the afikoman?" Leo replied, "Great big hug." And Papu gave him a hug and then sweetened the deal, giving him $20. Papu was always there, steadfast, guiding light, helping me navigate even the most treacherous storms. I'm eternally grateful for his love, kindness, and wisdom. It would be remiss of me not to offer my heartfelt gratitude, though, and acknowledgement to my dear mother for all that she did in caring for Papu for the last 10 years. Her care and devotion for Papu was a shining example of unconditional love and a true blessing for all of us. Thank you, Mom. Our Papu, Mort Roberts, will always be missed and remembered. May his memory be a blessing.
Thank you.
I hadn't planned to say anything, but in your very heartfelt talk, you didn't mention much about the Klein-Gallen home, so I thought maybe I would add a couple words to that. Mom and Dad, from, I don't know, as long as I remember, were volunteers at the Klein-Gallen home. They were there a lot, which meant we got to be there as well in the old building. I don't know how many of you here remember that. But the first trees we ever climbed were in the, there used to be an apple orchard in the front. We'd wander around in the wilderness behind while Mort and Fanny were busy taking care of, they must have had 1,000 parents. They took care of everybody there. And after Mom passed away, Dad continued to go there. And I mean, you know, he drove the bus, as he said. He was already, how old was he, Judy? He was in his 80s already when he was still driving the bus, I think. He said, I have to go pick up the old folks. So he never viewed himself that way. You know, Mort was eternally young. And with a good sense of humor, and as Frank mentioned, always think about others and doing for others. And I think it was that kind of volunteerism that kept him young and active. He was also an incredibly thoughtful person. And I thought it my duty to share one of the very last things he said to me. Coincidentally, as some of you know, my family and I live in Amsterdam. We're kind of far away. And we had planned to come visit him in Palm Desert. We arrived 2 days before he had to go into hospital for the final time. And it was my privilege to spend the last few days with him day and night. And he was at that point sort of going in and out of what we consider consciousness. But you could tell that he was visiting other worlds, other realities at the time. And he was, for a while, it seemed that he wasn't with us. We didn't know if he was just moving into a coma or not. And suddenly he said to me with a kind of urgency that I had to know that blue whales communicate with each other by singing over long distances. Where did that come from? So I said, that's really interesting, Dad. How do you know that? Well, I read about that in National Geographic. And that was one of the last things that he said to me. So, yeah, I don't know, the process of leaving us here and moving into other realms, it helps to give an insight, you know, into where those other places are, what kind of connections our souls make as we leave our loved ones here. So thank you all for coming.
I wanted to add one.
This is my husband.
One small thing. We've heard all wonderful things about Mort, and we all know, everybody who knew him, that they're all true. But there was one thing in particular. I'm from the Netherlands, from Europe, as are my two sons, our two sons. And you all know that there are tensions now between America and Europe. These were not there when the Nazis tried to do all these bad things in Europe and also other places. And Mort was only 19 when he was shipped on the Queen Mary, which was then a ship for troops, American troops, to England, and a little later to France. And we always thanked him and all the other American troops for liberating France, Belgium, Europe, and in the end also Germany. About 15 years ago, we made a little trip to Bologna in Italy by train. We put the car also on the train and had a wonderful holiday in Italy. But while we were in the train, it was a very hot day. Everybody was hanging out the windows, which was possible then. Mort saw all these German cities come by and brought back all kinds of memories. He never talked about the horror of these events. He was in the Battle of the Bulge, among other things. But he always had interesting stories to tell about how they pushed the Germans back. They ended up in Munich, and shortly after that, the final peace was signed in France and Reims. But that was one of my best memories of him telling these stories about those times. And I think in Europe we are eternally thankful for him and all the other American troops that came to liberate Europe.